This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan are our signature sponsors. An interesting time on the 8th day of October, 26 days from the election, and we'll talk about the debate last night between Vice President Pence and Senator Kamala Harris with Mary Patricia Ray in just a moment. But our state, for the sixth time in this hurricane season, is facing another potential catastrophe. The storm-weary Gulf Coast, still reeling from back-to-back blows from Laura and Sally, is bracing for another strike, this time a potentially disastrous one from Hurricane Delta. And tomorrow should be the big day, and the arrival is expected to be in southwest Louisiana, and we will be affected in Baton Rouge. And we don't know to this point how much, but we will be following it. And, of course, tomorrow when we're on the air at this time, we'll have much to talk about regarding the developments of Hurricane Delta. But please be safe and stay out of harm's way if you can. 877-217-5757 is your number. And as mentioned last night, Senator Kamala Harris, age 55, Vice President Mike Pence, age 61, squared off. And some people say it looked like a collision of different generations, Harris representing the young generation and Mike Pence representing the generation that that includes the boss, Donald John Trump, and his challenger, Joseph Robinette Biden. They have different views on the world. Part of it is generational, even though they're separated only by about 6 years in actual births. But obviously, it was a time in which their views were on display, and unfortunately, neither one answered the questions very forthrightly. And Matt Doyle, our producer, has a sampling of the exchanges last night in Salt Lake City between the vice president and the Democratic nominee for vice president.
The American people have witnessed what is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country. And our plan is about what we need to do around a national strategy for contact tracing, for testing, for administration of the vaccine, and making sure that it will be free for all.
I mean, quite frankly, when I look at their plan that talks about advancing testing, creating new PPE, developing a vaccine, it looks a little bit like plagiarism, which is something Joe Biden knows a little bit about. I think the American people know that.
Would you like to respond?
Absolutely.
The vice president got in a pretty good cheap shot there, and sometimes cheap shots are okay in debates, and there was nothing untrue about it. So Joe Biden was busted for plagiarism more than once. But he's led what some would believe is a stellar career, and some would say he's more than eager to compare his life with that of his challenger, the president of the United States. Now, Mary Patricia Ray, it's hard to pick winners and losers in these kinds of things because most of the people who are going to vote don't even watch, and those who do probably had their minds made up when they started watching. But what did you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine that with if you're undecided this far out from the election, and we don't have many undecided people this far out, it's hard to see what's going to change the dynamics in a debate like this. And it's hard to see a lot changing. President Biden up in the polls. If you discount a possible election theft or threatening people at the polls with guns, it seems like we kind of know where this one's headed at this point. Of course, no one's taking that for granted. But, you saw two polished folks who've been in many debates before, very careful about what they were saying. It was all well considered, and Vice President Pence wise to take shots at the presidential candidate instead of the person on the stage last night, for sure.
Well, it is an interesting time we're in, and we are 26 days away from the finish line. And the development today is that President Trump says he will not participate in the second presidential debate with Joe Biden, after the Commission on Debates said the event will be held virtually in the wake of the president's positive coronavirus diagnosis. The president went on Fox Business and said, "I'm not going to do a virtual debate. I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate." Is he missing an opportunity?
Well, I think he is angering the American people who, frankly, may not have ever watched the debate to begin with, but we're all sick of Zoom meetings. I would much prefer not to teach my own students. at Tulane Law School via Zoom. I would much prefer not to conduct my business via Zoom. And the fact that the leader of our country, the leader of the free world, can't be bothered to undergo the same aggravation that I undergo 4 to 5 times a day since March. You can kind of hear the frustration in my own voice. But I think we both know, Jim, that that's not what it's about. We all know that on Zoom, his microphone could simply be muted after 3 minutes. Wouldn't that be a pleasure to listen to?
Well, it was quite a show, and some people, of course, enjoy the show. And the president put on a show a week ago by constantly interrupting some 73 times. And Joe Biden came across as the nice guy that he probably is. And sometimes that can trump everything as far as issues that are being discussed. Is how do they come off as people? Is this a guy you would trust with your kids? Is this a person you would enjoy having a beer with? It's those kinds of things that often determine who, quote, wins a debate. And a listener notes last night, Mary Patricia, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, says neither candidate, Pence nor Harris, came across as particularly well-liked or people you would like. So,
see, I think they both have their base. They both have their base that's predetermined to like them, and that's who they were talking to. And I think Senator Harris talking to them mostly without many words. I mean, I want to know who her dermatologist is. As a female watching that debate, and I hate to gender anything about it, but she is a walking billboard for whatever kind of Botox or fillers or whatever that she has at 55, because her face is so expressive, and the way that she moved her face in the debate said everything that you needed to know about her position on. Mm-hmm. So she did her interrupting on the microphone just like President Trump did last week, without a word. I mean, it was an art. It was an art.
Well, she's skilled, and Pence is pretty good, too, as he calls himself Rush Limbaugh on caffeine, or decaffeine.
decaf.
He's a decaf.
Lord, we would not want to hear Rush on caffeine. Well, yeah, it would basically be Nazis, so watch out.
Thanks for the correction. Pence had to deal with a fly, and it's amazing how that suddenly became a big story, that there was a fly in his hair.
Yeah, you know, I'll do a little plagiarizing like Joe Biden and just say that the winner of the debate was the fly. I mean, that's been all over Twitter. I'm not the originator of the statement, but it certainly is true. And I think that although no one was persuaded by them, they both got their a few good lines in that play to their base. I was particularly struck by the debate over the Supreme Court and court packing, and I think Kamala Harris with her story about Abraham Lincoln and making the point that this president has appointed 50 people to lifetime seats on the bench, and not a single one of them was African American. I mean, she kind of really, really wiped them out.
Yeah, that's something I'm surprised that it's not been mentioned before, and maybe it should be pounded away more than it is. But Mike Pence, he basically carried the conservative mantle well, and he was a defender of the president. But as we know, the president does not like to be upstaged, and even on Fox News, people were saying that the president needed to take some debate lessons from Pence. The president would not like that. He would not like people saying that Pence did better than he did.
You know, no matter who your candidate is on the debate stage, I think deep down there's a part of them that doesn't like the idea that they could take a few pointers from anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it takes a certain personality to put yourself up there on that stage, and it usually is a personality that is a touch self-righteous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, there are some real, real cheap shots at Kamala Harris about her relationship many, many years ago with Willie Brown. And Willie Brown was separated from his wife. I don't think they ever got divorced, but it had been years since the separation, and he dated Kamala Harris when she was quite young. She was elected to all these positions long after that relationship was over. And if anything, Mary Patricia, I think it's more of a detriment to her than a help, the fact that she was once involved with the former mayor of San Francisco and head of the California Assembly.
Well, you know, it's a truth universally acknowledged, Jim.
Well,
to quote a famous book, that women in politics are just, they are just subject to these kinds of negative, you know, hit pieces on who they used to date, or frankly, who their husbands used to date, more than men are.
The vice president's son has called her a whore, and you've got the president of the United States, the president's son, Eric Trump, said this. But the president has, of course, a long history of liaisons that are not wholesome, including one with a porn star, one with a Playboy playmate, and many others. He allegedly raped a woman in a department store, but if you're a woman and you have a relationship with a man out of wedlock, somehow that makes you a sinister person in the eyes of some, but I don't think it's going to work. But we'll talk more with Mary Patricia Ray, 877-217-5757, your number, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Some more time with Mary Patricia Ray. Mark Ballard of The Advocate is not far behind, and we'll get his take on what's happening in the world a little closer to home. But last night in Salt Lake City, the vice president and the Democratic challenger, they squared off in a debate, and there was a debate scheduled a week from tonight, and who knows, it might still go on. But the president of the United States this morning pulled out of it because he says he will not participate in a virtual debate with his challenger, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Polls right now would indicate that the president should take every opportunity he can to get on the same stage, any place, any time, any way with Joe Biden. The latest conflation of polls from Real Clear Politics has Biden ahead by 9.7% with 26 days to go. Is it all but over, Mary Patricia?
Oh, it's never over till it's over. I will say, you know, people have been voting already in many, many states. People are voting here in Louisiana by mail already. And so you're getting a little late to do any persuasion. But one of the problems that the Trump administration has, among many this week, is they are experiencing the negative side of incumbency. And they just don't have a message that is persuasive to people who are not already voting for them. You know, they, all they can do is really hope that their base doesn't get depressed and not turn out. And frankly, doing things like, you know, taking away a shot at another stimulus before the election's over, announcing that you're not going to do that anymore. Those kinds of things only depress your base. They only encourage your base to stay home or not show up. And that's a big problem, you know, especially in states like Louisiana, where Trump's going to win. We have a lot of voters on the rolls mm-hmm. who never voted before 2016. And some of them have been pretty consistent voters since then. So we're playing a game here. You know, are those people going to keep showing up and keep voting in a chronic, you know, manner? Or are they going to get a little dissuaded and just sit it out?
Well, when we look at the last several presidential elections going back to 1996, 92 actually, the Democrat Clinton won in 92, the Democrat Clinton won in 96, in 00, Albert Gore got more votes in 04. George Bush did beat John Kerry, but it was largely in part because same-sex marriage was on the ballot in many states by design, which stirred the conservative turnout. 08, Obama won, big, 10 million votes over McCain. 10, Obama by 5 million over Romney, another big victory. And in 12, Hillary Clinton by about 3 million over Donald Trump. So going back to, we got to go all the way back to 1988, in which there was a convincing Republican win. And in the, 96, 00, 04, 8, 12, 16, the seven elections since, Democrats have gotten more votes six of the seven times. So Trump being behind is no big revelation. But what happens, Mary Patricia, if once again he loses the vote, and this time by more than 3 million, and wins in the Electoral College? Will the American people tolerate that?
Well, I think there's a question to be asked about that, side by side with what happens if he refuses to leave office, because those two things are going to go hand in hand if Trump wins the Electoral College or loses it. You know, there's a calamity kind of facing this country, mm-hmm. regardless of the result of this election. And I think it's important for people to look ahead to that either way, and decide what kind of country we're going to be and what kind of citizen are you going to be with regard to the results of this election?
Well, in the days before the election, we'll cover some of the amendments, and two of them I wanted to talk to Mary Patricia about before we move to Mark. But number one, which actually was passed in 2019, but is on the ballot now, and I think the reason is because Governor Edwards did not want this on the same ballot that he was running, because it would have stirred conservative turnout and might have hurt him, even though he is certainly staunchly pro-life. But it's a proposed constitutional amendment providing that to protect human life, nothing in the present Constitution shall be construed to secure or protect a right to abortion or require the funding of abortion. This is one that I would imagine will pass overwhelmingly, sponsored by a Democrat, Katrina Jackson. What are your thoughts about why this is on the ballot, considering that we've been shot down a couple of times in the courts regarding abortion legislation in Louisiana?
Well, Jim, I'm working on a small role in helping to finish a book about the Louisiana Constitutional Convention of 1973. And I can hardly imagine, having spent many hours reading the transcripts from that very long convention, a more conservative group of people gathered in one spot in that century in Louisiana to talk about constitutional law. And they did not see fit to put this in the Constitution in 1974. It kind of begs the question, if those folks didn't do it,
that was
maybe
a year after Roe v. Wade.
Maybe it's because it wouldn't be effective. Maybe it wouldn't be actually something that would stand up in court. So I think we may see that come to fruition at some point.
Mike in New Iberia. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, I hear the talk of the Electoral College. If memory serves me correct, going back 40 years plus in college, that was there to allow the smaller states to have some say in presidential elections, because if not, the four most populous states could determine the president.
Well, that's not true, because if you took the four states that are most populous, that still wouldn't get you anywhere close to 270 electoral votes. It'd get you over 100 by a pretty good margin. But in truth, it makes the smaller states have more clout than the bigger states. Your vote counts more in Louisiana than it does in New York and California. Your vote in Utah counts more than it does in Louisiana. It is a disproportionate system. It is unfair. It is the only election in America where the person can lose the vote and win the election. And Mary Patricia, it almost backfired on George Bush in 2004. If John Kerry had won in Ohio, he would have been the president. And it was not all that out of the realm of possibility that he would win.
Jim, you could have gone back even farther in your analysis of these presidential elections. You know, I've been seeing a lot of comparisons, or I've been making a lot, to Carter v. Reagan with this election, and that, you know, I think that Joe Biden is not making the mistakes of a Carter in this election against someone who, maybe I don't like him, but there are a lot of people who do. He kind of talks around all the issues. He misstates information. That was sort of the beginning of debates really focusing on false information from the candidates.
There was only one debate, too, between Carter
and it was
and
a
Reagan.
Very important one that Carter misunderstood. He misunderstood the meaning of it, and I don't think we're seeing that from the Democratic side. They're learning from their mistakes.
Right. That was one where a debate made a huge difference, and Carter, like Reagan, Carter, like Trump, was a one-term president who had very little experience. Carter had been governor of Georgia, but only 4 years. Proposed amendment number 5. This one is one that asks the voters, do you support an amendment to authorize local governments to enter into cooperative endeavor ad valorem tax exemption agreements with new or expanding manufacturing establishments for payments in lieu of taxes? Now, can you give us layman's language as far as what this actually means?
Jim, even though you can't go to East Baton Rouge Parish or your local school board and negotiate what your taxes are going to be, very large entities can. So it's going to give the ability of big manufacturers to go to their local government and negotiate what their taxes are going to be over a long period of time in exchange for something else. We don't know what that something else will be. There won't be a vote of the people about it. And I don't know about you, but I have some serious doubts that any of these entities will be negotiating higher taxes for themselves than they're already required to pay. There's an effort that's been put together over the last 3 or 4 years to defeat this thing. And it did a really good job of that in the legislature in 2 prior years. This year with coronavirus, a lot of people not at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. The bill got out, and great respect for the bill's author, Senator Abraham from over in Lake Charles. He's a great person, incredibly honest, lots of integrity. But this amendment is not good, and a lot of people agree with me on that. And that's why they put together a new effort that you're going to be hearing a lot more about and seeing a lot more on the television and the airwaves. A group called Louisiana Taxpayer Education Fund has been established to make sure that voters are informed to vote no on Amendment 5.
All right. By the way, next Tuesday we'll have Robert Travis Scott from the Public Affairs Research Council to talk about all the amendments. And in my conversation with him, he said this one has some merit, but also, as Mary Patricia said, some questions. And we'll find out more as we move closer. But we're back after this timeout.